Thank you, Wayne. I feel a good sermon's already been preached.
Preach another one.
I'm glad one person said that, you know, that's encouraging. There's at least one. So this is for Wayne. Excellent. Cool. If we can go on to this one, thank you. Christmas. I don't know how many of you managed to get here this morning without having realised that it was the first of December or the first Sunday of Advent. Maybe if you haven't got small children, you're spared from that. I think Kate was here on the Focus sleepover, so I think the third child that came into our room this morning said, "Can we have our Advent calendars?" Really? Christmas is coming. I've just had a week of making mince pies for Christmas Unwrapped and listening to Christmas music, and somewhere in there we were telling the Christmas story too. And in some ways, it's kind of the beginning of Christmas for me, marking that week. There's certain, that we play the same Christmas music through every presentation. So there's certain Christmas songs that I'm already now had enough of. Yet we'll continue to enjoy them for another however many days it may be. Christmas feels like it has begun. In another way, though, for me, Christmas doesn't really, in some ways, doesn't feel like it really begins until the end point of the Christmas Day service. You have no idea the joy I feel at that point when you all begin to leave the church on Christmas Day. I mean, just because it's ended and people start to go, and not because you're all leaving. Anyway, when I turn the lights out, that's the point on Christmas Day that you need to leave. Advance warning. But there's that feeling of finally it is here, for me anyway. It's a point for me, holiday begins, and there's a great deal of relief and a chance to rest and enjoy it. But of course, then there gets to that point at about 6 o'clock on Christmas Day. And I know I'm not alone in this. My father-in-law was definitely the one. I feel it internally, but it was my father-in-law who would be the one when we had Christmas with them, who'd get to about 6 o'clock on Christmas Day and go, "Well, it's all over, isn't it?" And I don't know if it's like that for you. Christmas suddenly feels very short, certainly for me, the time between about 12 and about 6. And it's like, well, that was it. All this build-up. And you maybe you're with me and you can't wait to get to it. Maybe you have that feeling too of not being able to wait to get to it. Kate was chatting with another teacher today who said that, who said that she doesn't put up her Christmas decorations until the Christmas holidays begin, until she's broken up for Christmas. Because it's arrived, we're here now, it's Christmas, and she can enjoy it. And maybe you're at that kind of point of, I can't wait to get to it. I can't wait for the last day of school or the last day of work or when I go to be with the family or whatever it might be. Or just that point of Christmas morning or Christmas Eve or whatever it might be that you're looking forward to. You think, I can't wait to get to that point. Maybe you can't wait to get to Christmas. Or maybe your feelings this year are a bit different. Maybe actually you just can't wait to get through it. I just can't wait to be on the other side where it's done. But can't we just get back to normal? Because I can cope with normal life, but all of this is just too much chaos. And maybe it's the pressure that others put upon you. Maybe it's the pressure you put upon yourself. Maybe it's the in-laws. Maybe it's just family. Maybe it's school holidays. Maybe it's the person you'll be missing. And actually, you'd rather just get through it and be done. And either way, whether we can't wait to get to or whether you can't wait to get through Christmas, in some ways it feels a little bit hopeless, doesn't it? Because if we can't wait to get to it, we know somewhere lingering in the background is that we will get to that point on 6 p.m. on Christmas Day where it's done. And there's all that build-up and all that expectation and suddenly it's over. If we can't wait to get through it, it just seems bleak and hopeless and just putting up with all these people who put joy signs everywhere and expect you to be joyful. I think for some young people, perhaps this morning just stirred up joy at the fact that they have Wren Collective nowadays and don't have to sing those songs anymore. Wouldn't it be good if actually we could have a joy that lasted. A joy that endured even through times that we want to get through. And that's something of what we're looking at through these next 3 weeks. Searching for a joy that lasts. It's going to be based upon this book, Rescuing Christmas. We're seeking to rescue Christmas and something of that, of just seeking to get to it or get through it and find something that might be a bit more significant and endure for longer. Searching for the joy that lasts. And we're going to be looking, as has already been mentioned, at the Magi, at the wise men. And this verse comes just beyond the reading we had today from Matthew chapter 2, verse 10. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. When they saw the star that was leading them towards where Jesus was, they were filled with joy. And they were only giving presents, they weren't receiving them. They didn't have Christmas lunch, they didn't have carols, mercifully. They didn't have Christmas pudding or Christmas cake. I mean, the poor guys. And yet they saw this star and they were overjoyed. What if we could find a joy like theirs that endures? And as I say, it's going to be based upon this little book. There's lots of copies of it in the foyer if you'd like to take one. It's a really easy read. You don't even have to be, even if you're not a great reader, it's readable in one sitting. And if you don't know much about the wise men, maybe the whole idea of what Christmas is really about is a bit newer to you, it would be a great read. Or if you just want to dig in a little bit more to what we're talking about through this series, it's a good read. If there's someone you might like to give it away to, then they're ideal for that, for those that maybe might be looking for some joy that lasts this Christmas and who you might like to share the real Christmas story with. They're there, there's lots of copies, feel free to take them, they're free for you. And as we begin with this, and as we start to look at the wise men, the Magi, over the next few weeks, we need to actually get back to who they really are and what they really are about. Because if all we know of them comes from a brief skim through the Bible and our carols, then we can easily be misled. We Three Kings of Orient Are is somewhat misleading when we sing that. Because as we've had great joy this last week in Christmas Unwrapped, we enjoy taking, for year six students, kind of busting some of their beliefs behind Christmas and seeing their faces and reactions as we do that. We don't know that there were three kings. We don't know that there were three of them. We know that they bought three gifts, but if you read it carefully, you'll see that it doesn't tell us how many they were. I said kings a moment ago, but of course we don't actually believe that they were kings. The Bible uses the word magi, which means wise men. So they almost certainly weren't kings. And of course it says there that they're from the Orient, whereas in the Bible it doesn't actually tell us that either. It just says that they're from the East. So we don't really know where they're from. So if anyone can fit this to the first line of the carol, we indeterminate number of learned ones from somewhere a fair way to the east of Judea. If we can make that work, Ruth, for Christmas, that'll be good. But I guess it doesn't sound quite so well. Equally, we of are doesn't work terribly well either. So I don't know what we do with that one. But we need to bust a few myths about them as we begin. And over the next few weeks, the particular thing we're going to focus on is the gifts that they bring. They brought these three gifts. Gold, and we're going to talk about the gift of leadership. Frankincense, the gift of friendship. And myrrh, the gift of a clean start. We're going to do them in slightly odd order. Today, we're starting with the gift of leadership. Next week, Matt will be speaking on the gift of a clean start. And then the week after that, it'll be the gift of friendship. But as we really get back to the Bible, at looking at who these men were, we see some quite surprising things about them. I think these guys were a bit mad. I mean, just pause for a moment and consider what's going on here. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, just a little footnote that they came along sometime after he was born, he might have been about one or two by this point. During the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." They came from the east because they saw a star and so they decided to follow it. Now, these wise men are probably somewhere between the people who could tell you, you know, all the constellations in the night sky and the people who write horoscopes, okay? They're somewhere between those two, because in about this time, those two things kind of went together. You studied the stars to try and understand what was going on Earth, and if significant events seemed to be happening in the sky, then that would mean significant events were happening on Earth. So it's somewhere between, you know, proper study of the stars and horoscopes is somewhere where we're between with these two guys. I mean, if your work colleague said to you, I read my horoscope the other day and it said about going somewhere where it's cold, so I've decided to go and spend Christmas in Poland, you would think that they were crazy. This is something of what they've done. They've seen something going on in the night sky and gone, oh, let's go on a massive road trip. And yet, in the amazing midst of this, we know that they got it right. We know that they did spot something significant, that somehow, through this, their study of the stars and what God was doing in the night sky, he revealed himself to them. And these guys aren't even Jews. They're not part of the nation of God's people. They don't know God. He hasn't revealed himself into the way that he has done to the Jewish nation at this time. And yet he reveals himself to them through the way that they were looking at the night sky. And they go on this mad journey to follow after him. I think these guys are a bit more crazy than we thought before. And just for a minute, they come and they say, show us the one who's been born King of the Jews. If a friend said to you, there's been a new baby prince born in Denmark, so I'm going over there to go and meet him. Again. Denmark have a monarchy, by the way. I looked that one up before. You'd think they were nuts. I mean, if someone, royal family born in England, you might be interested in it. But why would you go to Denmark to go and meet a prince from there? Why are they interested in the King of the Jews? They're not from there. That's the whole point. And yet they go on this whole journey to go and find the king of a different nation. Show us the one who's been born King of the Jews. What are they doing? And yet somehow, in the midst of all of this, they've got it right. And we know they got it right. So why was it that they knew? How did they know? I mean, there's all sorts of promises about who this king will be. There's all sorts of promises, and even within our text, the Jewish leaders point us towards it. Herod asks, where's this king meant to be born? And they get it straight away from Micah chapter 5, in Bethlehem. That's where this one's going to be born. This irony here, of course, in which they turn up saying, these wise men turn up saying, "This, where's the one who's been born King of the Jews? We've seen that he's going to be born." They say, oh, he's been born in Bethlehem. And the Jewish leaders, of course, do nothing about it. In stark contrast to the Magi, who've gone on this journey, this seemingly crazy journey, to go and seek him out. And the leaders know all along where he is, and do nothing about it. Did they go on this journey because they knew something of the promises about who this king would be? Because Micah 5 doesn't stop at the bit where it talks about him being born in Bethlehem. It goes on a few verses later to say this in verse 4. He would stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord. He goes on to describe who this one who's being born is. That he will be a king with the very strength of God himself. But not just the strength of God, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. That he has not just the strength of God, but the very majesty of God. And his rule, his reach will be to the very ends of the earth. These Magi caught something of who this king was, that he wasn't just going to be the king of the Jews, the king ruling over Judea or Israel, but that this was one who was going to be king of the whole earth, who would come and rule with the strength and the majesty of God himself. And the only one who could do that, the only one who could come and rule with God's strength and his majesty was God himself. The only one who could rightfully rule to the very ends of the earth would be God himself. They go on what looks like this crazy journey, and yet they get it right. They've come and they're seeking the one who comes with the power, the strength and the majesty of God, who's come to rule not just the Jews, but the whole earth. But even then we might ask, well, why are they that interested in it? Because generally when there's people who want to rule over the whole earth, we're not too keen on that idea. We don't really want a dictator who's going to come and rule the whole earth. Generally, that doesn't end up very well. But Micah doesn't just tell us how he'll rule, doesn't just tell us what he'll rule and the strength he's got, but says something about how he'll do it too. He will stand and shepherd his flock, we're told in Micah 5. This king who has come will be a shepherd king, not one who's going to come and rule with an iron fist, but one who's come to shepherd his people. To lead like a shepherd leads his sheep. And very quickly we pick up echoes of Psalm 23. You might like to turn there in your Bible and be reminded of the words if you don't know them well yourself. Page number 555, if you've got one of the church Bibles. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. This is the kind of leader we find in Jesus. The one who comes as the shepherd king. And if you can recall back some months ago, we were looking at Psalm 23. And I showed a video about something more of what this would be like, because of course when we talk about sheep and fields, we very quickly think about very lovely green lush fields of grass, which is a far cry from the kind of thing that those around Jesus would imagine, though, of what it is like to shepherd a flock in Israel and that part of the world. Because you don't have lush green fields, you have barren land. And there was this video that very powerfully showed us, and you can find it on YouTube very easily, I'm sure, if you look up Psalm 23 and shepherding, that the shepherd would lead the flock to find little clumps, little tufts of grass growing on the backside of a hill where little bits of moisture have gathered and little bits of grass have grown. And the shepherd would lead the flock to find those little bits, one mouthful at a time. We might talk about our daily bread, little bit by little bit. And the sheep trusts the shepherd to lead them to what they need, step by step, bit by bit. This picture of the shepherd who leads us to our needs, to lie down in green pastures beside quiet waters to refresh our soul. Perhaps words we so often need to hear in the frenetic time of Christmas. And not just that leading, but your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That the shepherd is one who offers both protection from the enemy and guidance. That's what those two things represent. The protection away from enemies and those who might attack, and guidance to be led in the right direction. That's what this shepherd king offers. And it's no surprise then that what we read in Micah 5, that he will stand and shepherd his flock with the strength of the Lord, the majesty of the name is God, and they will live securely. It's no surprise then, if we've got that kind of king, that kind of leader, that we're able to live in security and to live in peace. Because suddenly we find it isn't all upon us. Because suddenly we find it isn't all about our own frenetic activity and us trying to make the best decision that we can or be all things to all people. Suddenly we find there's one who is with us, leading us, comforting us and protecting us. And in him we can find security and peace. That's why the Magi came. Because somehow they caught a glimpse from a long way away of who this king would be. They offered them the gift of leadership that no one else could fulfill. And they were willing to go on this long journey to find him. And we know they were right. I wonder if they ever knew what happened next. I wonder if what they knew, if what else we hear as we journey on through Matthew's gospel. That here's the one then who came and healed diseases in Matthew 8. He's the one who showed he had power even over creation itself and calmed a storm. He's the one who defeated evil powers and drove out evil spirits from demon-possessed men. He's the one who even showed that he was Lord and powerful over even death itself. He's the one who says right at the end of Matthew that all authority in heaven and on earth is his. I wonder if those men ever knew they were right. This was the one who they'd come to worship. This was the one who really offered them the gift of leadership. But of course the problem is, as we come to that gift that we're offered, the question is whether we want to accept it. And even as we read this passage, we see this great contrast between the wise men as they come and Herod. The wise men who are overjoyed when they see the star that will lead them to this one who will be king, and Herod, who, if we know the story, we know is so threatened by this other authority, he goes and kills a generation of boys that he might not face a question, a challenge to his own authority. Even as we journey through Matthew, we see that. Even those passages we just talked about, these demon-possessed men in Matthew chapter 10. Is it 10? No, Matthew chapter 8. Just to give you that brief bit of story, Jesus arrives on the region of the Gerasenes, and two demon-possessed men come from the tombs, meet him. They were so violent that no one could pass that way. He comes to this region where there's two people possessed by evil spirits and they become so aggressive, so violent, that no one will go that way. No one will even go near them. And they come towards him, and we'll just to briefly give you the middle part of the story. They come towards him and Jesus casts out the evil spirits. They go into a herd of pigs and they run off into the lake. And this is what happens at the end. Those tending the pigs run off, went into the town and reported all this, including what happened to the demon-possessed men. Then the whole town went out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they pleaded with him. Please, would you stay with us? Please, would you come and heal our sick? When they went out, they pleaded with him. Please, will you come and teach us? Please, will you come and tell us by what power and authority you're able to do these things? Please, will you come and join us? Because we want to thank you. Because we couldn't go anywhere near these guys and you've healed them. And now we see them sat there in their right mind. Please, will you come and help us? Because we've never met anybody like you who could possibly do anything like this. They pleaded with him. Please would you go away? And sometimes when someone with real authority shows up, we just want them to go away. Because actually sometimes we'd rather just face it on our own. Whether it's sickness, we're strong enough to deal with it ourselves. The storms of life, we'd rather battle it on our own. The powers of evil, well, we can hide from them, thanks. Death itself, we'll deal with that, thanks. Because all authority is on me. And we wouldn't put it that way, We wouldn't say it in that way. Maybe we'd like to be more poetic. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Words written by someone facing oppression, by whose conclusion was it to say, well, whatever they throw at me, it's okay because I'm in charge. I'm the king of my life. I'm the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul. I will lead this ship of my life through whatever waters it may be, through whatever storms I may face. I will plot my course. I will lead and find my way. And sometimes we'd rather face when one who comes and says, I'm offering to lead you, to be king of your life. In fact, king of the whole earth. We'd rather actually say no thanks. We're offered the gift of leadership. Maybe we have let Jesus aboard the ship of our life. Maybe we are willing to have him involved in some way. Jesus, I've heard that you're good with food, so you might be quite good in the ship's mess. I heard there's always enough when you're around, so can you look after that department? But I'll still take the wheel, thanks. Jesus, I heard that you're quite good with sickness, so can you be in the infirmary? Because if I get ill or someone I know is ill, or you know, actually, then you'll be quite handy, because I've heard that you're quite good at dealing with that side of things. Jesus, I heard that you're quite handy to have around if I'm facing death, so you know, if you can just be there available for when those situations come. Jesus, I know that sometimes you can plot a way through, and if I lose my way, you might be able to help me. So you can be around, you can kind of be the navigation guy. And, you know, if I need some kind of direction, I'll ask you. If I get a bit lost, I know that I could ask you to try and find a way. But of course we know, don't we? We've already seen that this isn't what Jesus is offering us. This isn't the gift that we're offered. The gift is the gift of leadership, one who will come and take the wheel. One who will come and lead us, both personally and in our life together, in the life of the church. The offer is the one who will come and lead us through. And perhaps the challenge for you this morning might be to let him on board. Maybe you never have. Maybe you know you've lived your life saying, well, I'm the master, I'm the one in control. And you've never invited him. You haven't recognized that actually the gift that he offers is that he will come and lead. Not as a tyrant, but as that shepherd who will guide you in the right way. Maybe you know you're not letting him into the right place in your life at the moment. And you need to make a change. Because we know that leadership is important. I'm not trying to show two-party bias here. It was just a handy image that I found. Don't complain to me, to the Electoral Commission. We know that leadership is important. This whole election campaign that we're going through at the moment, we all know that we elect local MPs. And yet, where does all the focus go? It goes upon the Prime Minister. When we look back through over recent years, we moan about it. We say, well, it's all Theresa May's fault. She wasn't a good enough leader. It's all David Cameron's fault. He never should have done this or that. And if only we had this person, all our problems would be solved. Okay, there's not many people saying that. Because actually, isn't it now a time we're acutely aware that there aren't leaders out there that somehow meet all of our expectations, that somehow will lead us in just the right way, that somehow will miraculously make everything better. And as we look at other people and we know that, why can't we recognise that for ourselves too? That we know we're not the right one to be the captain of our soul. That we know we need leadership in the right way. And there is only one. And it was the one that the Magi came to find. It was the one that somehow they saw from far away and they were willing to make a huge and difficult journey and a long journey to come and find him and know him more. And they were overjoyed when they saw it. They were overjoyed when they saw the star. Because they found a joy that wasn't just built up in either getting to or getting through a particular event or a particular moment. But they found a joy in having one who would lead them. Having one who would rule over them. The one who was the good shepherd. The one who would come and shepherd them as his sheep. That's what we're offered in Jesus. That one who will lead us beside quiet waters. That one who will provide for us daily what we need. The one who we can trust to direct us and protect us. And the one who will come and do that, not with any kind of earthly strength, not with the power of a human office, not with our own strength, but with the very strength of God himself. With God's power and strength and majesty. The one who can bring us security and peace. When we face difficult decisions, when we face uncertain times, wouldn't it be great to know that the decisions you make don't rest completely upon you? Wouldn't it be great to know the fact that you've got one who's leading you, who is king over the whole earth, who comes with God's majesty and power? To know that actually as you make decisions and you face things, that actually you've got a promise in Scripture that says if you ask for wisdom, God will generously give it to you. And actually you can make a decision trusting in God as you make that. That he will show you the way, that he's given you wisdom, and that if you make a decision seeking him, seeking the wisdom he's got, and trusting in the best information you've got at the time, that he will lead you. And that even if it doesn't work out the way you might have expected, even if it seems like it goes wrong, even if it seems like you might have missed out on something else, that God knew about that ahead, and it wasn't all upon you, because you were asking him to lead you. And seeking him and listening to him and asking for his wisdom. That you can trust him. To know in these dark times, when we face difficulty, when we face hardship, that actually the one who is with us, the shepherd, is the one who can overcome even death itself. The one who will be there even in the darkest moments of life. That's what we are offered. If we're willing, personally and together, to accept this gift of leadership. It's why the Magi came. And it's why when they saw the star and they found Jesus, they were overjoyed with a joy that would last. It's the gift of Jesus' leadership. Let's pray.